Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's episode, we're covering the Pitch Day 2024 competition that was held in Nashville this July, an event organized by Bitcoin Magazine and Martel Fox. We are speaking with the winners of the categories Scaling, Open Source, and Energy/Mining. So today, respectively, we cover the business models, highlights, what they're working on for Jolts, Stable Channels, and Wrigley. We hope you enjoy. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. And if you enjoy the content that we're producing, please remember to like, to share, to comment, to give us your feedback, as this all helps us greatly. Welcome. Today we have Ian Major from Jolt. We're excited to have you on after a successful win at the Bitcoin 2024 conference for Pitch Day, which we were very excited to be a part of. We got to hear a little bit of your short pitch there, Ian. So welcome to the podcast, first of all.
Thank you guys so much. It's great to be here. It was a great event, and I love the show. So honored to be here and get the chance to chat a little bit more about what we're doing.
You won in the category of scaling solutions, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And layer two. So, you know, the way the conference did it, which I really applaud, is they segregated the finalist into the different categories of mining and layer two and scaling and open source. And obviously, you know, the ability to scale Bitcoin is so important. So can you talk a little bit about what Jolts is and how you're addressing this solution?
Yeah, absolutely. I think scaling for us, you know, we're very focused on the Lightning Network, which I think has been the kind of main layer two that a lot of folks will be familiar with. And if you're not, you know, Lightning is a network on top of Bitcoin that makes Bitcoin payments nearly instant and, you know, basically, you know, low cost. So you have all this new throughput which you don't get on the sort of layer one or the main layer of Bitcoin. And so the Lightning Network, you know, in that way is great. That being said, what we've discovered in our work at Jolts is that not everyone is, of course, ready to be paying with Bitcoin, right? You know, there's a lot of people out there who would much rather hold their Bitcoin, you know, and certainly not spend it. You know, there's also many other people for whom their existing unit of account, whether that's dollars, whether that's euros, whether that's whatever the sort of, you know, fiat currency that they're using, if you think about that, that's a really strong network effect in their lives. And in many cases, it's something that it's almost not an option, right? I kind of have to use that particular unit of account because maybe I'm a business and I have to pay my expenses in that denomination or whatever the case is. So without going too much into the details, one of the huge use cases that we see at Jolts is being able to bring additional assets onto the Bitcoin Lightning Network, things like stablecoins and other types of things like that, because with that additional demand, you're going to be able to grow the Lightning Network and scale this layer two to a point in which it can support, you know, many, many, many more people than it does today. So we're taking kind of an interesting angle with this, and it's less about the sort of protocol level and scaling Bitcoin. And it's more about how do we kind of scale the economic incentives that underpin the Lightning Network.
And, you know, I'm curious, Ian, because you mentioned this stablecoin component and, you know, maybe you can get a little bit into that part of the SDK and what you guys are working on. But, you know, I'm wondering, when you were looking at founding Jolts, I mean, as far as providing this solution of, you know, scaling the economic pie of, you know, of Bitcoin in the world, where do you see the need or the users of Jolts, you know, per se? Did the emerging economies aspect, draw your attention? That you kind of touched on it, a lot of people around the world, although we focus a lot on the investment side and store value component, like you mentioned, a lot of people just don't have a currency that works, right? You know, whether it's, you know, lack of banking access or whether it's a highly inflated currency. So stable coins can actually play an interesting bridge there between, you know, Bitcoin and a stable dollar.
Where, what was, I guess, the backstory of why you got into this aspect?
Yeah, I think bridge is a great word that you used. You know, we're sort of, many of us in the community are kind of used to thinking about this progression or this supposed progression of how money goes from a collectible at the very start to this store of value. And I think, you know, most folks listening and watching would probably agree that Bitcoin has kind of secured a nice foothold in that phase, right? This store of value, well over $1 trillion asset. You know, that kind of game has been won. But when you think about the later progressions of Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, Bitcoin as a unit of account, these other functions of money, you know, we are simply not there yet. And so, interestingly enough, like our backstory as a company, we actually started, you know, early last year in 2023 with a focus on Bitcoin rewards. So we built a whole series of tools that would allow businesses to bring Bitcoin rewards into their operations. So think about rewarding customers for making a purchase, for making a referral, for signing up for a newsletter. Could be a sales team incentive, right? You close a deal in Salesforce. All of these different actions can trigger a Bitcoin reward, you know, using our solutions. So that's actually where we started as a company. What we quickly realized was that that's great. That proposition is great for Bitcoin native businesses. However, you know, the second that you start talking to more mainstream businesses that are kind of outside the Bitcoin sphere, it becomes pretty obvious pretty quickly that, okay, yeah, this is interesting. However, most businesses are not ready to jump all the way to Bitcoin rewards. And the thing, then the theme that kept coming out of those discussions was this unit of account aspect. And so, right, like, okay, I like the idea of being able to send value in a cheaper way, faster, across borders. All of these are incredible trades, but I need to be able to kind of denominate those value transfers in something that I'm familiar with, in something that the rest of the business uses, whether that's dollars or what have you. So that insight was actually what originally led us down this path of Taproot Assets, which we believe is the protocol, is the right protocol for bringing these additional units of account to Bitcoin and to the Lightning Network. And in sort of building some of the tooling there, we realized, oh, there's a lot of other use cases beyond just kind of rewards. So we sort of broadened our focus as a company. Instead of Bitcoin rewards, you know, we're really a Bitcoin infrastructure provider now, where rewards is one of many kind of use cases. But yeah, I also think to your point around like the geography of it, I think it is certainly the case that the store of value is, you know, is a little bit skewed in terms of some of the, you know, kind of more developed economies. And then for the developing and emerging, you know, economies, that's where that medium of exchange piece is so important. But when you look, there is this insatiable appetite for dollars, right? Whether we like it or not, and we can have our own opinions about the future of the dollar, right? But the fact is that there is immense demand for it today. And just as one kind of data point that supports that, if you look at the payment volume for stablecoins, right? And this even strips away a lot of the kind of, you know, automated smart contract and bot payments and these different things. If you strip all of that noise out, the payment volume is still about 1,000 times higher than payment volume on the Lightning Network, right? So this shows you something, and it shows you, I think, that people still, you know, really need that kind of existing unit of account. But yeah, that's a little bit about how we sort of got to this realization of why this is so important.
And for context as well, by the way, this is somewhat of a novelty, right? This concept of bringing stablecoins to the Lightning Network.
100%. Yeah, this is, you know, call it what you will. You've heard people throw around Bitcoin Season 2. I don't, you know, whatever we want to call it, there's been this really exciting influx of developers coming back to Bitcoin, realizing that we can build these additional use cases on Bitcoin, right? Because while stablecoins got started on Bitcoin, this was, you know, many years ago, they quickly went to other crypto ecosystems, whether it's Ethereum or Tron, what have you. Taproot Assets is a protocol that brings those technical capabilities to Bitcoin. And to your point, Israel, literally just a couple weeks ago, we got the final release that actually enables this on the Lightning Network. So this is bleeding edge, and I think folks will see and hear a lot more about this in the coming months.
Ian, who are your typical clients? I know that probably with the rewards part of Jolts that you started out with Bitcoin companies, but are you now with this new development, are you expanding into more traditional companies that you've talked to before, but they may not have been that, quite ready for it?
Great, great segue. We indeed are. There's a great example of that called Kilo Club. Kilo Club is a fitness center of all things in Las Vegas. They're opening additional locations as well. And the owner has had this idea of a kind of member-owned gym for quite some time. And so what he will be doing with our technology is creating the Kilo token or the Kilo asset. And this is going to be something that members will programmatically earn every time they visit the gym. So they have like a little app that they scan to open the door. And so every time they do that, they're going to programmatically earn this Kilo token, which they can exchange for Bitcoin, and other, sorts of, prizes and things like that. But the reason that this was such a key kind of unlock for him is that it's, this Kilo token, it looks and feels like a traditional loyalty point. It doesn't carry with it this whole need to educate people on, well, what is Bitcoin? Right? It's a very steep learning curve, as many of us know. So that's one example in the kind of rewards vertical that's really exciting to us and that represents, bridging into this, this non-Bitcoin, sort of world. So we're going to learn a lot from that. But then in addition, we have all our reward tools over here, and that's all fine and good. We've also developed now our software development kit, and what that allows for, and this additional vertical that we now are going after are other types of wallets. So there's a number of existing Bitcoin wallets, Lightning Network wallets, even wallets in the broader kind of crypto ecosystem, all of which are going to find value in adding support for the Taproot Assets protocol for their users. And so each and every one of those wallets or other app developers are going to face a classic choice, right? Build versus buy. Do I, build all of this new scaffolding and support for this cutting-edge new protocol myself, or do I use a easy, simple solution like the Jolts SDK, which, by the way, we've estimated will save developers, 2,000 plus hours, which is very valuable. So that's also really exciting and represents, a huge opportunity for us that we're seeing.
And what's the revenue model, Ian, for Jolts?
Yeah, so it's a little couple different pieces. So with that SDK piece that I just mentioned, it's really comes down to the different actions that a user takes. So let's imagine, I'll just use a kind of example. OKX wallet is a large wallet that, millions of users use. Let's say that they want to implement Taproot Assets in their wallet using the Jolts SDK. Essentially, what that then means, it's free to use the SDK, so it's free for them to use our SDK and add that support to the OKX wallet. But then, when a user mints a Taproot asset, it creates a Taproot asset or swaps a Taproot asset, maybe right a stablecoin and swap that for Bitcoin. So anytime a user is doing one of those key actions, we earn a small fee. So that's the business model for the SDK. And then the rewards piece is a little bit different. It's just a subscription, monthly subscription based on the amount of reward value or volume that's going out each month.
So it's essentially kind of transaction based in different flavors.
Exactly.
You
That's true.
enable people to kind of plug these capabilities into their business model, into their product. Is
Exactly.
that
And
right?
I think we'll probably have some sort of, unification, further unification of that pricing over time. But, given that this is so new, we're basically listening to, we're listening to our customers and kind of, building our pricing model out accordingly.
Maybe can you give us an idea or snapshot, Ian, of the team, what stage you guys are at, maybe any early traction you can give us, and what the roadmap looks like in the coming 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, definitely. So the founding team is three of us. So myself, I look after business development, client engagement. Stephen Dodge is our co-founder who owns product and operations. And then Lyndon Stark is our CTO, our resident shadowy super coder for those of listening who appreciate that meme. One of the most talented Lightning Network developers out there. So we're very fortunate to have him. That's the core founding team. Steve and I go way back. We've known each other for 20 plus years. And then we have a couple other team members on as a contracting capacity. We're doing some fundraising now, so hopefully we can bring more of those on full time. In terms of traction, we have about 30 businesses or so using that suite of reward solutions. So that's great. Even the likes of Blockstream for their e-commerce store, they're relaunching their referrals program for their e-commerce store using our solutions, which is super exciting. Folks will hear more on that very soon. And then we've got about five businesses that have signed on to our SDK agreement for the all the kind of stablecoin side of things. And we are actively building the SDK and the wallet products as we speak. We should have a big release of the desktop version of the Jolts wallet. And for folks to, maybe put that into perspective, the Jolts wallet is going to be a wallet that anyone can use. But really, it is a demonstration of how the SDK can work. So like the SDK is the main, software development kit is the main offering. The Jolts wallet is an example of what can be built with that offering. But that'll go live here in the next probably week or two. And then we're working hard to add all the Taproot asset and Lightning support over the coming couple of weeks.
Ian, you said that you two go back for 20 plus years. How did you guys get interested in Bitcoin and decide to start a business together using it?
Yeah, we've both had the entrepreneurial bug for quite a long time. My background, I worked as a consultant for a number of years. We had a software as a service product, working with big companies like Walmart, Emirates Airlines. We were acquired by MasterCard, interestingly enough, which was interesting. Gave me a view into the belly of the beast for some of the traditional kind of payments and finance. And I think in tandem with that, both of us were just sort of organically kind of going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole as one does, right? Listening to podcasts like this, learning more, reading more. I think we're both sort of, freedom minded and freedom oriented. And, we're naturally, I think, attracted to some of those properties of Bitcoin. But then, of course, you realize that there's so many facets of Bitcoin that, it's this kind of, continually fascinating thing to study. I think we both just sort of came to the realization that it is hard to justify spending time working on anything else. And that was the sort of mental switch that propelled us to say, well, we have to do something in this space. And I think the original genesis for the company focused around rewards came a lot out of my experience at MasterCard, and previously a company was called Applied Predictive Technologies, where we were looking at loyalty programs and doing analytics on loyalty programs for big companies and helping them understand what's working, what's not working, why are people happy or not happy, about this. So a lot of those ideas sort of intersected with this realization that, hey, there's no way we would rather be spending our time than working on furthering Bitcoin adoption because we think that it is that important for the world.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's definitely some things we can relate to there, Ian. But like you mentioned, there's so many facets to it. And it's great to see some of these scaling and medium of exchange focused businesses and infrastructure starting to take off, right? I mean, Lynn and I have talked about it, plenty as well. We do feel there's a very real momentum right now in some of the infrastructure behind being able to actually use Bitcoin and stable coins more broadly, right? As a kind of more day-to-day transactional currency. Along the lines of your growth and fundraising, Ian, anything that you'd like to share as far as, maybe what you're hoping to fundraise in case there's anyone that's listening that's, maybe interested?
Yeah, we're definitely so we're actively fundraising on a safe. I can certainly, share more details for anyone who might be, interested. The timeline for that, I mean, we're kind of well into that process, and certainly the win and the event has helped those conversations for sure. We will probably do an initial closing with an angel consortium that's kind of leading that round end of this month. And then I imagine a couple of our other conversations with some of the other VCs will extend into September. Probably by the end of September, we would hope to have this all wrapped up. We're looking to raise $1.5 million again on a safe for basically a seed round. We did a very small pre-seed round last year, but this will basically help us grow the team. Clone our CTO, right? Which is crucial, and it's super exciting. To your point, Israel, we're seeing a significant uptick in job postings from the likes of Lightning Labs, from the likes of Lightspark, other players in this kind of scaling space. I'm telling you, there is going to be a an arms race for talent. So this fundraise will go kind of directly to that. And it'll also help us deliver on some really, really exciting projects. I mentioned the Kilo Club earlier. There's another one that's a Brazilian stablecoin issuer, which I estimate will be, one of the, if not the first stablecoins, on Lightning. So there's some very exciting stuff that this is going to go to directly enabling.
Yeah, well, congratulations on all of your progress. And I know we talked, gosh, I guess about a year ago or so, or 8 months, I don't know, with ahead of the Big Boom conference. And it's just great to see your growth and the continued expansion of ideas, because I think as more corporations and entities just understand the capabilities of Bitcoin and Lightning with micropayments, with the ability to reward in fractions that they haven't seen before, and then to extend that in terms of any kind of loyalty program or any type of commerce and an exchange of value, it's these tools are going to be really, really important. And so, growing from rewards to a Bitcoin infrastructure company is quite an accomplishment in a year. So we applaud you and really look forward to tracking your growth as we go forward.
Thank you so much, Lynn. No, it's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you for coming on, Ian. And we hope to, we were just speaking to this earlier before kicking things off. We hope to get you back on for maybe, a deeper dive into what Jolt is doing in a few months. So, appreciate the time as well. And I echo Lynn's congratulations and good wishes on the next few weeks and months.
Yeah.
I appreciate all the great work that you guys do. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, Ian. And to close us out, can you share where somebody can contact you or get a hold of you or track what Jules is follow what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. We're on X. Of course, you can find the Jolts account at Jolts, JOLTZ underscore BTC. You can find my personal account at Ian double underscore Major, Major. Those are probably the best places to reach out. You can find me on LinkedIn as well, Ian Major. And you can find our homepage, joltsrewards.com. We were joking earlier, so hopefully soon just jolts.com, but Jolts Rewards for now. Those are probably the best channels to reach out.
Welcome, Tony from Stable Channels is joining us for this part of the coverage of Bitcoin 2024 for the pitch day. Tony, you were the winner for the open source track, so we're excited to get into all of that. But first of all, welcome, and yeah, it's great to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So maybe we can just get right into it. But before we get into what you're working on, as far as Stable Channels and the work you're doing in the Lightning Network, open source, all of that, we'll get into first, maybe what's your background, Tony? What got you into this project?
Thank you so much. So, I'm a longtime Bitcoiner and a longtime software developer. And I started to work on Stable Channels last fall of 2023. And before that, for 5 years, I had worked at JPMorgan Chase. And there, I worked on their digital assets team, called Onyx. And I was the technology lead, as a matter of fact, of building out their digital assets trading network, which traded tokenized US dollars, you know, stable coins, tokenized US treasuries, and it traded repurchase agreements. And so I have a pretty broad background in cryptocurrency systems and finance and trading. But as a longtime Bitcoiner, I see an immense opportunity with Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is still underrated by traditional finance folks, and the technology is very robust, and I see a very bright future for Bitcoin products and Bitcoin-related technology. So I took the leap last fall to resign from the bank and to work on Bitcoin full-time. And since that time, I've been working on stablecoins.
Okay. And out of curiosity, by the way, Tony, so I actually used to work at Swift, and a lot of what was covered was precisely, for example, Onyx, you know, this tokenization side of the crypto, you know, quote unquote world. And, you know, to me, similar to you, you know, longtime Bitcoiner, I mean, I think the obvious, I guess, weakness to that is just the closed network, right? I mean, the network effect is just so difficult with these closed loops. But out of curiosity, what was that part of the motivation as far as just kind of projecting where things are heading, working on some of these concepts, but in an open network like Bitcoin and Lightning? Or what was the motivation to take that step?
Well, I think, you know, when I was working at the bank, I saw a lot of course, we used blockchain technology. We used Ethereum-based technology. And so we built the whole suite, key management and, you know, smart contracts and networking and cybersecurity. It's a very comprehensive project that we worked on. But a number of times I saw where the blockchain rubber hits the banking road. And so the analogy that I like to give is we just had the Olympics. And if I'm running a race with Usain Bolt, you know, one of the fastest men in the world, he would obviously be in a race. Now, if I were running that race with Usain Bolt and I had to, and I held his hand, right, you could only go as fast as I can go. And so when it comes to using these new technologies, a lot of times they are just, like, frankly, hamstrung or limited in their capabilities because of the strictures of traditional finance, because of the strictures of regulatory compliance. And so when it comes to, for example, tokenization of these assets, sure, they can move on blockchain rails, they can move really fast. But when we're talking about ultimate final settlement, when we're talking about ultimate transferred ownership, where does that occur? How does that occur? In a lot of cases, that occurs still on legacy rails, which are not able to take full advantage of the immense efficiency gains, immense speed gains, scalability gains that we can use with Bitcoin specifically. And so that's part of the motivation why I wanted to work on something a little closer to the Bitcoin tech, where we can really take advantage of these tremendous opportunities.
Yeah, Tony, I mean, I agree. I look at, I mean, one of the purposes of us starting this podcast was really to describe Bitcoin as a financial technology and not just an asset that's traded. I think there's a lack of clarity on that. And so you obviously, digging as deep as you did into blockchain technology, saw that there are other blockchains, and then there's the Bitcoin protocol, which just has that scalability and also the divisibility into the small, you know, small amounts. And Lightning in particular, which is the layer that sits above that. Can you tell us a little bit about the solution that you're providing with stable channels and what problem you're solving? So dig a little bit deeper into the specifics of what you're working on.
Well, of course, I would love to. So stable channels addresses a major impediment to broader Bitcoin adoption across the globe and for different use cases, which is its price volatility. Anybody who has held Bitcoin knows that the price can go up and down 10% in a day, right? And for a lot of folks around the world, they can't tolerate that volatility, or they're not used to it quite yet. And it's very understandable to me. It's a very volatile financial asset. And so in response to this, in the cryptocurrency, broader cryptocurrency ecosystem, a lot of folks have turned to centralized stablecoins like Tether or USDC. And these are cryptocurrency tokens, which stay one-to-one backed by the dollar, essentially. And these have grown tremendously, especially since 2020, from less than $10 billion in 2020 to over $150 billion of these stablecoins today. They're tremendously popular. They've been a great innovation that have been proved useful for millions of people. But at the end of the day, and I mentioned my banking background, these stablecoins are kind of like bank coins. Your money, when you hold it with Tether, is held at a bank. And, you know, when you hold your money at a bank, for many people across the world, that to get access to that banking system is really useful. But there's still some challenges with that. There can be a run on, you know, simple stuff. There can be a run on the bank. Your money can get stolen from the bank. Your money can get your bank account can get frozen. So those are a number of challenges that these centralized stable coins have. I also think that they might have some regulatory hurdles down the road. And these stable coins also run on Ethereum-related technology, which, Lynn, you mentioned Lightning. Lightning is just more scalable, and we can get into it, but I think a little bit better technology for payments than, for example, Ethereum-based stablecoin technologies. So this is the problem, which is Bitcoin price volatility. We've had one solution, which has been these stablecoins, which I kind of call bank coins. And as Bitcoiners, we look at the tremendous growth of stablecoins and we say, can we do anything about it? Can we do better? Can we offer something that is self-custodial, peer-to-peer? And that's where stable channels enters the equation. And so we offer another manner, another method to keep users stable in dollar terms. But under the hood, it's all Bitcoin. There's no tokens. There's no banks. There's no centralized stable coins. What we do, in a nutshell, is we let users peg a portion of their Bitcoin balance in the Lightning channel to U.S. dollar stability. And the way we do that is that we, in this case, a little bit financy, but we match up longs and shorts over Lightning channels, and we settle very frequently to keep one side stable in dollar terms. And so under the hood, it's all Bitcoin. Both counterparties have Bitcoin, but Bitcoin is used to settle very rapidly so that each side of an ongoing trade get what they want. One side gets the dollar stability, and the other side is taking that Bitcoin upside and taking that Bitcoin downside. Effectively, they've doubled their exposure or their leverage long. So in a nutshell, that's how stable channels functions. And we hope to offer another solution to let users deal with that Bitcoin price volatility.
And Tony, could we go through maybe just like a very simple practical example of what you just mentioned? You know, maybe you and I are looking to get into one of these agreements you're mentioning, right? How does that work? We each put in a Bitcoin, for example, and then there's a smart contract tied to that, or what's the I guess practical example of how this would work?
So you got it, Israel. So there is a, to begin with, there is a smart contracts involved with. These are called Lightning channels. And Lightning channels, Lightning Network connects all of these same smart contracts on Bitcoin together to create this payments network. So that's kind of how Lightning works. And so, Israel, let's say that you wanted to be stable in dollar terms. And here we are in August 2024, and the price is about $60,000. So you have one Bitcoin and I have one Bitcoin, let's say, and you want to be stable at $60,000. You want to peg your one Bitcoin at $60,000. And so what happens is that we both put our Bitcoin into this smart contract called a Lightning channel. And the objective is to keep you stable at $60,000, okay? And so how can we do that? Because the price of Bitcoin changes all the time, right? Well, with Lightning, we have unlocked a new capability, which is very cheap and very rapid settlement capabilities over these Lightning channels. And so that's the capability that stable channels employs to maintain the peg at $60,000. So every 1 minute, you're running the stable channel software and I'm running the stable channel software, right? every 1 minute, your computer goes out and queries the latest Bitcoin price, and my computer goes out and queries the latest Bitcoin price. We do this from a number of different exchanges to protect against one of them or two of them being compromised or giving wrong answers. But anyway, we come back, and let's say the Bitcoin price has gone up. Well, then that means it takes less than one Bitcoin, right? It takes less Bitcoin to keep you stable at $60,000 until you slide a payment over the channel to me, all right? Well, fast forward some time, we do that same process. We get the latest price. And now let's say the price has gone down, but now it takes more Bitcoin to keep you stable at $60,000, right? And so I send a payment over to you. And so this is the very frequent, through this very frequent and voluntary ongoing settlement process, we can give you the stable dollar exposure on your side. And on the meantime, I get your, I get essentially 2x long Bitcoin exposure on my side. So that's kind of the mechanics of how it works technologically.
Okay. And it conceptually sounds familiar to me, to maybe like a perpetual future, but with the efficiencies of Bitcoin and Lightning. Is that correct, or am I off there?
Oh, that's exactly right. And so a lot of times with these perpetuals, futures or perpetual swaps, and people call it all sorts of different names, but there's something involved there called a funding rate, which modulates the demand for the longs or shorts. And so actually, your listeners might be interested to know that here in August of 2024, it's an interesting time, because at this point, the shorts are paying the longs. So for what, especially on Binance, for whatever reason, you know, the market is that way. So, yeah, you're spot on that with these perpetual swaps, it's very closely related.
Tony, can you get into a little bit about who is the ideal market? Who's your client, or who's the user of this? Would it be more institutional types of clientele, or would it be more international, that are looking for dollar transactions, but with stability for, you know, trading partners? What would be a use case?
So right now, this technology is back-end technology, more suitable for Bitcoin businesses and sophisticated Lightning runners, node runners, that type of thing, because it does use at the core, you know, all of this Lightning technology. So you're going to want to be a Bitcoiner, probably, because under the hood, it's all Bitcoin, right? And so you're going to want to be comfortable with having some Bitcoin exposure. But then I think it would be for anyone who has Bitcoin and wants to hedge their Bitcoin exposure in a way that keeps things self-custodial. And so, you know, unlike centralized stablecoins where your money's at a bank, with savings channels, you always have custody of your Bitcoin. And, you know, that has trade-offs, of course, because you have to kind of run your own infrastructure or have someone else run your infrastructure and keep track of your keys. But on the other hand, if something goes terribly, terribly wrong, you're guaranteed to always have your Bitcoin, which is really great. And so now this is most suitable for, Lightning businesses, Lightning developers, but we're working to expand the functionality to create a mobile application to give this, to make this available for more types of end users.
Tony, can you talk to us a little bit about monetization of stable channels, or how are you generating revenue, and what's the kind of business model for you? I guess part of that question too is open source, because we haven't touched on that, but you were the winner in the open source category. So you've chosen to make this technology available open source, and you have contributors to it. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
So I have chosen to make this product open source, and Lightning has a very strong open source culture. And so I wanted to be able to take advantage of that. And anytime you're building a piece of software where users run it self-custodially, and it runs very close to the Lightning node, they're probably going to want to inspect things to make sure that they do what you say they are doing. And I completely understand that. And in addition, there are just like dozens of world-class engineers working on Lightning and Bitcoin across the globe that I already been able to, you know, nerd stuck into the project and take a look at my code, and that's been fantastic. So it is an open source project, and I have a long-term view for this. So when it comes to, I'll speak first on partnerships and then on monetization. When it comes on, it comes to partnerships, I'm interested in people who are Bitcoiners, who understand the Bitcoin ethos, and who see a market in, you know, Bitcoin-backed stablecoin-related technologies, these type of derivatives trading technologies on Lightning. You know, if you're interested in that type of area, then we should talk. So I'm interested in open source cracks. I'm also interested on a medium-term horizon, we'll say, to monetize. And I think that this particular solution is amenable to monetization in several fashions. Firstly, you know, you can take, if you're offering stability services to users, then you are effectively leverage long, right? And so that's a monetization opportunity. Normally, if you go to Binance or whatnot, normally you have to pay for the honor of going leverage long, right? Because Binance is lending you that money. Again, in August 2024, that's opposite. Normally you have to pay. So this is a way for users, for investors or users of this app to get access to a cheaper way to increase their Bitcoin exposure. Now, that's like maybe like the first kind of set of opportunities. But if we think about bringing this, making this even more and more usable, more and more accessible to folks on mobile applications or their own infrastructure, then we can think about this as a peer-to-peer marketplace for not just dollar derivative assets, but also other types of derivative assets. And so I think insofar as my company, my technology can be helping to orchestrate those trades, help them to orchestrate those payments, help them to set people up with risk management solutions, then there's monetization opportunities to, you know, to take a cut of those trades, to take a cut of those payments, and to give a good service for folks that's reliable. And I think people will be happy to pay for that.
Thanks for sharing, Tony. We're kind of wrapping up here, but I mean, it's fascinating. You know, I think this whole financialization of Bitcoin is one of the biggest TBD and to be seen, you know, in where things go. And some set of services will be centralized, some will be decentralized, like what you're working on. So, you know, it's great to hear some of this work going on in the back end of what we'll probably see the fruits of in, you know, a short few years, and who knows where things are headed, but it's great to hear more on stable channels. Thanks for sharing, Lynn.
Yeah, I mean, I we could talk for an hour, I'm sure. It's like, I'm fascinated with the project. I'm fascinated with the potential of, you know, really replacing the existing TradFi system with better technology. And I think your tool is certainly one that has a lot of promise, and being one of the parts to that replacement system or complementary system. So really appreciate you sharing with us. Tony, maybe just in closing, any final thoughts or where people can find you or find more about your work and about Stable Channels?
Sure. You can go to stablechannels.com, and there's a number of links and resources section there. You can find me on Twitter. I'd be happy to talk more. Thank you all so much. It was really joyful.
Nico, Evan, from Wrigley Founders, glad to have you on after your successful win of the energy and mining sector in Nashville at Bitcoin 2024. Welcome.
Thanks, Israel. It's really good to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Israel. It's serious to be here. It's fun.
All right. Well, let's get right into it. So, you know, maybe before we go into what you guys are doing at Wrigley with hash rate and the problem of centralized mining, why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe both your backgrounds and what got you into Bitcoin and, you know, a brief origin story of Wrigley?
Sure, I can go first. So I started working in Bitcoin full time in 2016. We started researching it pretty hardcore and felt like I was doing it full time in 2016. And then I started working, I think, in 2017 with BTC.com, which back in the day, they were kind of first famous for developing this wallet SDK that was very popular as an open source wallet that people could use to, yeah, make their own wallets and start playing around with Bitcoin as software. Then that team kind of expanded and they created a Block Explorer that was pretty popular for a little while. It also moved over to the Block Explorer team. And then finally started working with their mining pool, which is what they really became known for. And that's where I got my first foray into mining. Really great team over there. I started working with this one person in particular, Alejandro de la Torre, who's kind of well known within the mining pool circles. And when the team there left BTC.com, this was in 2017 or 2018, excuse me, they founded Poolin. I went over and helped Alejandro over there with some research and communications on the pool side. Helped him with Taproot activation when that happened later in 2020. So that was really exciting. And then finally, I left Poolin to start my own mining operations using flare gas in Argentina. Yeah, that's kind of my background, and obviously I then met Evan afterwards.
Yeah, and so I, prior to meeting up with Nico and sort of going down this adventure with Wrigley, so for many years I worked at Hudson River Trading when it was a much smaller company. I think it was when I started, it only had 40 employees. And I was sort of in charge of the research environment. So a lot of what you see with, you know, kind of these large-scale data centers with AI, we had an early version of that in Hudson River. So I was there for many years. And then around 2020, I got curious about Bitcoin, kind of during COVID. And I reconnected connected with Chaincode Labs, which was founded by two of the co-founders of Hudson River Trading, Alice and Suhas. And I just, you know, started exploring some projects in Bitcoin, did, you know, participated in setting up some fuzzing, funds cluster for Bitcoin Core to identify bugs before they were, you know, became bigger problems. And then I worked with Adam Jonas at Chaincode to do a sort of a pilot project in Bitcoin mining in Zimbabwe to sort of see if you could have solar panels solar powered Bitcoin mining, and where the Bitcoin mining would pay for the cost of setting up solar. And there's obviously a lot of sun in Africa to take advantage of. I did the pipe work out. I'm at 10 mining rigs, mainly about one online. But it's a bit of an adventure to get that set up.
And why was that, Evan, out of curiosity?
Yeah, so part of it was issues with customs, getting hardware, you know, getting these sort of like industrial, you know, mining computers through customs. And then we were working with a solar installation company in Zimbabwe that we only got a few of the rates through customs. And then also it's, you know, doing remote setup with hardware is pretty tricky. So through those challenges, Jonas and I were kind of kicking around the idea of, you know, how do you get more mining up? Why is it so hard to mine Bitcoin? And that led to me sort of meeting up with Nico, who had certainly by this time had a lot more experience with Bitcoin mining than I had.
You were exploring problems then with mining. What were the biggest challenges that you found and which I apparently is the origin for Wrigley?
Yeah. There's several key problems with Bitcoin mining. Like in the early days of Bitcoin, anyone could just mine with their computer. But now you sort of need access to capital to buy these rather expensive mining rigs. There's several thousand dollars each to really mine Bitcoin at scale with an eye on actually, you know, making back your investment. You also need access to cheap electricity. Like in Manhattan, we're paying 20 cents a kilowatt hour. You can't really run a mining rig here. And you need, you know, sort of operational expertise to set up the hardware and keep it running. All of those things are, you know, challenges for just anyone who would, wants to participate in the network and securing the network.
Can you just take a little bit of a step back for our audience who may be more general investors and entrepreneurs instead of deeper into the Bitcoin space as we all are? But can you explain why somebody would want to be participate in mining and maybe even the differentiation between having a node and mining?
You want to take that into it?
Sure, yeah. So we have two kind of main agents on the Bitcoin network, right? You have, maybe we can call them three. You have people that are transacting, that are just sending kind of transactions from one wallet to another. And you have nodes that are, you know, kind of like sucking up all of those transactions and then rebroadcasting them across the network. And then you have miners that pick up those transactions and publish them onto the blocks of the so-called blockchain, right? And each player does its own, has its own like role, right? Obviously the users are the people using the wallets. The nodes are kind of like a lighter, easier to access way to participate in network consensus, where they store the kind of the record of the blockchain and help broadcast all the information so everybody has the same information, right? They're kind of the keepers of truth are the nodes, and it's really easy to run your own node, and you hear that all the time online. But the miners is a little more difficult to kind of participate in. Miners are really where the security apparatus of like Bitcoin comes into play. And it's where we have the proof of work for the system. And when, you know, people talk about proof of work very often, they're like, oh yeah, proof of work, but like, you know, what is proof of work? Well, it's really using a lot of electricity and demonstrating that that electricity is going into creating hashes, right? Which are the it's the mathematical function that we use, the cryptographic function to encrypt information. So why is it important to mine Bitcoin, or why should anybody care about mining Bitcoin? Well, you know, there's a few reasons. One is that we want the network to be as distributed as possible. So the more people that care about mining Bitcoin and that participate in Bitcoin mining, the more distributed that system is. Nowadays, it's pretty also pretty popular to talk about on Twitter and on social media in general, that mining centralization is a big problem, because that leads to less censorship resistance, or basically it becomes easier to censor transactions. Why? Because you can basically exert pressure on the places that are publishing these transactions. And you say, hey, Mr. Block Publisher or Mrs. Block Publisher, please do not publish these transactions. And that would then lead to censorship, right, of those transactions. So by having more people participate in mining, we increase the distribution and the censorship resistance of the network. Another reason why people want to participate in mining is because it's probably the most private way to access Bitcoin. If you go out and buy a Bitcoin mining machine, you are not KYC'd to buy that mining machine. You're just going and buying a computer. You don't KYC to go buy a computer, right? So when you plug in that computer and you point it to a mining pool, you will get remunerated in Bitcoin for the work that you are providing that mining pool, these hashes that I was talking about, right? And when you're remunerated in the new Bitcoin that is produced for that block that that pool finds. So every so often, a pool is going to find a block, and they are going to have their pool's Bitcoin address in that block where the new Bitcoin is deposited into. And then that new Bitcoin that gets sent to the pool's address then gets redistributed to all of the workers or people that are contributing hash to that pool. And you're basically getting fresh new Bitcoin that has no transaction history to it. And you can imagine that you can sweep that fresh new Bitcoin that goes straight from the protocol right into your hardware wallet, and that's pretty private. So in a world where we're, you know, constantly under threat of Chainalysis, and when that gets, you know, linked to your exchanges, KYC, and then your coins are just forever tied to basically that whole KYC process. And in an open financial system like Bitcoin, where it's easy to trace these things, well, that, you know, mining can have a nice kind of solution to some of those privacy concerns. Those are a couple of reasons.
And let's say, Nico, I understood the reasons you just gave, and I'm interested in mining Bitcoin. What are the different options and why that, you know, a individual or company has, and why did you create a marketplace for the hash rate?
Yeah, so, you know, the main way people tried to mine, it used to be that you'd get your CPU, your computer, and you'd point it to a mining, or not even to a mining pool, you would actually run your own node and mine it with your own computer. Now, over time, it became more difficult to do that because of what we call the difficulty of the system, basically. How many hashes you can produce in a second correlates to how much you're able to get paid. And a CPU can produce less hashes per second than a graphics processor unit, like what they use for AI nowadays, which can produce less than what now everybody uses, which are these specialized equipment, we call them ASICs, application-specific integrated circuits, that, you know, create trillions of hashes per second. So the orders of magnitude have gone much higher, and basically for you to get any, you know, a CPU would take you probably a year to get cents, right? A GPU might take you a few months to get a couple cents. And then with an ASIC, well, it takes you about a day to get some cents. So you still don't get a lot, which is why you need not just this specialized hardware, but really cheap electricity, like really, really cheap electricity. And now it's becoming the case with after this last halving that you need ever more cheaper electricity, and people's margins are getting really crushed. And you can see now that all the public miners are taking out all of this debt and convertible notes so that they can basically cover their costs, because even their electricity prices aren't making the cut. So you also need 240 volt power, for example, for these things. So basically what I'm trying to say is buying your own machine, setting it up, and actually trying to make any money off of it is not a particularly easy endeavor. So let's say you don't want to go through that whole process, or you've tried going through that whole process and you realize, hey, this thing is really loud, it puts out a lot of heat, and I'm not making any money, my electricity bill has gone through the roof. So then it's like, okay, but I still want to participate in the network. So what do you do? Well, you go online, you say, okay, Bitcoin mining. And then you will inevitably come across a, you know, slew of scams, or what we've called cloud mining scams, where you go and you pay for some Bitcoin mining that is supposedly going to show up to either you're going to get the rewards from them, or you're buying it from, you know, some mining facility out in, you know, who knows where. And you send over the Bitcoin, or you buy the machine up front, and then when it's time for you to get your hash rate, it's nowhere to be found. Another option would be hosted services. And these are less scammy, oftentimes. Sometimes they can also be scams. The problem is that there's a lot of intermediation there. So you're going to get, usually you're going to have to buy a machine outright, and that's going to get marked up. Then they're going to take a fee, and then they're going to also take a fee on the electricity price. And there's no guarantee that that hosting facility will stay up. So back in 2017, 2018, or actually even afterwards, when like the Russian invasion of Ukraine, for example, there were hosting facilities in Russia that all went offline, and people, you know, either lost their machines or were never able to actually get any of the hash rate that they paid for the hosting facility. Something similar had happened in Kazakhstan when the energy, basically, you know, mining gets outlawed in China. All these different situations can come up where that machine that you paid, you know, thousands of dollars for upright, you're never actually able to pay it back because it goes offline. And that was actually something that happened with Evan as well, which was one of the reasons that led us to create Wrigley. And part of what we're trying to do is, create a marketplace that basically doesn't allow, you know, where you can't get rugged. So you can easily access hash rate. Yeah.
Can you describe what Wrigley does, how you're solving this complicated, I want to mine, but it's very complicated to do it on my own or to do it through hosted services or things like this. So what is Wrigley, and how are you helping people mine and make it easy to mine?
So basically Wrigley is we're a marketplace for hash rate. And so we take hash rate from mining farms around the world, and they send their hash rate to what's called our Stratum proxy, which is really just a sort of a picture, an operator switchboard that takes the hash rate from the mining farm and goes into a customer. And so you can, on the marketplace, you can buy hash rate, you can buy what we call spot hash rate or instant hash rate, and you start mining immediately. And you sort of, you know, pay a variable premium to the spot hash price, and you can mine new Bitcoin, and it goes to your pool account. And as Nico described earlier, you know, from the pool, it goes to your hardware wallet directly. you know, so with free KYC free. So we have a small number of users, you know, who really enjoy doing that. And we've gotten a lot of good feedback from them about what they want from the product, from the marketplace. And then the other way you can buy Hashrate is through auctions. So each week we have a handful of auctions, to buy Hashrate, and establish what the market price is going to be for the Hashrate. And so if you look on Reaply right now, you'll see that we have one auction running, and we're, you know, that Hashrate, you know, sort of when the price varies based on market conditions, and buyers to buy a Hashrate auction, they can potentially earn a profit, if the market price is low. And as we saw earlier this week, there was sort of a burst in transaction fees that gave a bit of a boost to the hash price. And that's for sort of, you know, the buyers who, you know, who not only want privacy, but perhaps want to earn a potential profit on their mining. And so ultimately what Reaply is it's a marketplace where any Bitcoiner can go and buy Hashrate, and mine Bitcoin without buying a mining rig, and with their payments stored in escrow. So we have an escrow service that's on chain called Trustless Mining, where the buyer's payment is held until they've received all of that Hashrate. So there's no possibility of them getting, sort of robbed, and losing their initial investment.
And then also the advantage of that, so you're paying a slight premium for the hash, but you're also not needing to make that capital investment at the very beginning. So that's, and perhaps even for people who have thought about mining but want to dip their toe in, this is a great starting point for them, but it could also be something that they just continue to do because it makes more sense.
That's exactly right. Like for me, like living in New York, like there's no way I could ever have a mining rig in my apartment. But this way, by buying Hashrate through Reaply, I could still mine and I can still participate in the network. So,
and the auction mechanisms, Nico and Evan, just to be clear, is that also like, let's say, spot Hashrate, or is that a forward Hashrate? How does that work?
That's a great question. So we've experimented with both formats. For the moment, the auctions are using the same spot format. So after the auction is complete and after you make payment, you start receiving Hashrate once you make your payment. We have also sort of experimented with a more forward auction delivery, like where you sort of bid on Hashrate for a future time period. And then you take delivery, you know, some weeks or months in the future. But just to keep it simple, as we're sort of bootstrapping the marketplace, we're focusing on the spot delivery.
Is anyone else doing a similar sort of service? To my knowledge, you're the only ones who are doing this ability to participate in Hashrate without the investment.
You want to take that one, Nico?
Sure. Yeah. So there are other marketplaces. They're a little bit, they function a little differently than we do. So you have a NiceHash and Mining Rig Rentals are two places where you can go buy Hashrate in a similar fashion to us. The mechanics are a little bit different. To my knowledge, they don't use escrow the way that we do. So we release the funds to the seller after the Hashrate's been delivered. So if there's any downtime, for example, in your order, whether it's, you know, 1%, 0.5%, or whatever it may be, that we can always refund the buyer for any of that downtime. Then we're also Bitcoin only, so we take Bitcoin in and we send Hashrate out. I think we're also the only marketplace that does basically uses everything. We build everything on Bitcoin's rails, basically. And yeah, I think our auction mechanism is also the only marketplace that has basically pricing using an auction.
Super interesting, Nico and Evan. I mean, it sounds like you guys are bringing some price transparency to the, you know, mining and hashing industry as well. And to me, it sounds like, so basically, let's say I'm an interested buyer. I'm able to outsource all the operational and hardware complexity of getting into mining, but maintaining some of the control that which you mentioned a little bit earlier, as far as which pool do I want to direct my hash rate to. There's been some discussion on that. Can you maybe just very briefly touch on why that's an important component? And if you are seeing this kind of behavior from, you know, I don't know if you have stats on this so far or not. Ocean is the first you know, one that comes to mind as far as a differentiated pool. How much, you know, how much of that are you actually seeing as far as maybe some of the reasons behind why I would want to control where my hash is going to?
Yeah. So a lot of our customers buy hash rate and point it to Ocean.
Yeah.
So just as anecdotally. Okay. Why does this matter? Maybe getting back to the kind of broader question. So nowadays we have a handful of pools, and most miners are pointing their hash rate to two big pools. Either it's Foundry, and this is very much the public, publicly traded mining companies here in the U.S., and then the other one would be Ampool. And Ampool is run by Bitmain, which is the largest manufacturer of hardware, of mining hardware in the world. And they've basically been around for a long time and have consolidated market share across the mining industry. So not just in hardware manufacturing, but also in operations and in the mining pools. So what that means is that we have two actors, and there are a lot of smaller pools are in fact proxies, we call them, for Ampool. Basically, they're using the exact same software as Ampool, and their mining rewards are going to Ampool and Bitmain as well. And what we allow people to do is buy hash rate that is part of a seller's account that is pointed either at Foundry or Ampool and redirect it to some of these smaller pools like Ocean. There are other examples as well, not just Ocean. You have SBI Crypto, Luxor. We have one pool that we've been working with that we're partnering with. It's called Demand Pool. They're going to be the first Stratum V2 pool. And it's run by our friends Alejandro, who I mentioned earlier. And we're very interested in integrating Stratum V2 template, like a template provider service, into Wrigley. So you can come, you can, you know, sign into Wrigley, buy some hash rate, and then we'll have a client for you so you can choose which block template you want to mine. And that would be a really strong step forward in the decentralization of mining.
We could talk about this for, I'm sure, quite a bit of time, and our time is coming to a close. So I feel confident, Israel, I don't know how about you, but we'd love to have Wrigley back on and do a more complete episode and dig deeper into the importance of mining decentralization and how you're solving that problem and making it easier. But just as we close up, can you just give us a snapshot of the company itself, where you are in how and Wrigley's growth and what your kind of path is going forward? You were part of this pitch day. So are you currently raising funds, looking for partners? What is the status of the company, Wrigley?
I can take that one. So really right now we're sort of, you know, very much like iterating our product, iterating the platform, and identifying sort of the areas where we have some market fit. So we're over the next few months in September and October, we're going to onboard some more sellers and sort of scale up the hash rate to see, you know, how far we can scale the auction platform and the auctions, and continue to make hash rate available for direct sale for folks that want to pay like just the simple premium and start mining right away. So we're going to, you know, ramp up our marketing efforts over the next few months. We also are working on an integration with a company called Bit Escrow for the on-chain escrow. We're very excited about that. They put a lot of work in over the past few years to make a really robust escrow system that's easy to use. And then towards the end of the year, we're looking at sort of just building on what Nico said. We're integrating fiat payments. We're going to see how that might be possible. Because we have heard feedback from many users that they would like to pay in dollars and get Ashburn. And we're looking at sort of a proof of concept for the Stratum V2 integration so that we could have that sort of template provider as a service that Nico described. And really towards the end of the year, as we sort of identify where we have most market fit, we're going to open up for a seed round. Don't have specifics on how much we're looking to raise at this point. I think that's going to be based on how much of the platform we still want to build out in 2025 and where we really what we what we established is our product market fit.
Great. Thank you. And then where can people follow along with your progression and path?
Yeah. So you can sign up for the Wrigley newsletter on our site, wrigley.io. You can also come try our test drive for 1,000 sats and, you know, try mining. Get hash rate delivered straight to your pool account and really kind of get your hands dirty there.
Yeah. So you can follow us on Twitter or X. Not so follow Twitter. Trustless Mining is our.
And we'll have that in the show notes. I mean, thanks for getting into what you guys are working on, Nico and Evan. We'll definitely have to have you both back on.
Really appreciate you guys having us.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment. This helps others find us, which is especially important for this new podcast. And if we had lawyers, they'd tell us to tell you that the content of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not to be considered investment advice or a recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the episode. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.